33 on a Tuesday night in Lansing. Thank you for joining us. Well, 40 million people have it. 4 million know they have it. Of those, less than half are adequately treated. It's sleep apnea. And while it's been known to have all kinds of adverse effects on health, now two studies finding that it increases the risk of cancer and by 500%. A man that knows all about the sleep disorder and can tell us much more about it is Dr. Joe Golish, a professor of sleep medicine with the Metro Health System in Cleveland and the founder and medical director of the Sleep Resource Foundation, also the medical director of the North Coast Sleep Center. Joe, thank you very much for joining us this evening on WILS.
My pleasure, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So briefly, if you could tell me, what do we know about sleep apnea, this repeated pause of breathing during sleep? It can apparently happen more than 30 times in an hour. What causes that to happen?
Well, that's a very good question. I often say it's almost like having brown eyes. It's sort of constitutional and part of a person. But there are some predispositions in a person's anatomy that can substantially increase the risk, and namely being overweight, also being very muscular. A big neck, even if a person's not overweight, increases risk. In addition to that, being male makes a difference, that the male gender is more prone to it. In addition to that, people who have a large tongue, people whose jaw sits back, so they have kind of an overbite. And then also, if you look in the back of the throat, you'll see some patients where their uvula is long and their soft palate is large and their throat just looks crowded. So These are the anatomic predispositions, but their airway is okay while they're awake. But when they fall asleep, the muscles relax in the throat and this collapse occurs.
So tell me something, though. How can tens of millions of people have this problem of not breathing while they're sleeping and be completely unaware of it?
Well, that's a good point there. I mean, a good question. And that's really the dilemma in apnea, because much of what happens at night. And so the person's totally unaware of these episodes. I mean, like you said, a person might have 30 episodes like this per hour of sleep, but they might only wake up once a night, you know, with choking or snorting or gasping. What happens is that the brain senses this obstruction. It sees the oxygen go down and the blood pressure and pulse shoot up. And the reaction to it is the brain waves speed up, and it's what we call a microarousal. And so a person doesn't wake up entirely. They just get into a lighter stage of sleep. And that restores the tone and the muscles of their throat, and so they can breathe again, at least for the next minute or so. And then it all happens again and again.
And in terms of sleep, how interrupting is it for the actual level, the brain waves that occur during deep sleep? Does it pull somebody out of that state completely?
Yeah, absolutely. These people are very much REM-deprived. Rapid eye movement sleep is one of the restorative stages of sleep. And in that stage of sleep, the muscles are even more relaxed than they are in the non-REM stages. And so when that occurs, you know, people will often get little or no REM sleep, and often these patients will tell you they don't have any dreams at all. And as a result, even they can spend 12 hours in bed asleep and not have any restoration. So they're not aware of why their sleep isn't restful. They wake up unrefreshed, but, you know, we end up blaming the daytime symptoms on lots of other things. Mm-hmm. We blame it on stress or overwork or depression, you know, and so on. And the same thing with blood pressure and heart trouble and strokes. Those happen to other people who don't have apnea, and so often the connection's not made.
It can get very confusing. I'm talking to Dr. Joe Golish. He's a professor of sleep medicine at the Metro Health System. I need to ask you, Joe, about this study, these two studies. Apparently they have shocked the whole sleep medicine community. What is the connection here between sleep apnea and cancer, and how much of a surprise did it come to you?
I was flummoxed and flabbergasted. I mean, I've been in, dealing with sleep apnea for about 35 years now, and for much of that time, there have been innumerable associations as far as complications of apnea. We started out with things like, you know, fatal car accidents, for people falling asleep at the wheel because of their excessive sleepiness, and even involving innocent bystanders because of these accidents. And then there became more and more information in the last 10 or 15 years about heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension, and so on. But this really came out of nowhere. Usually there's some, there are indications in the medical literature, but there was no forewarning of this. And it was really a surprise finding, and that's why it was presented at the major respiratory meeting that was occurring in San Diego this year.
And can you very briefly and quickly give me the theory behind why there's such an enormous increase of risk of cancer with sleep apnea?
Yeah, as far as the risk, it's directly related to how much apnea a person has. The risk is greatest in the people who have more severe apnea, and it's about five times the non-apneic patient as far as dying of cancer. And the mechanism, and there is a little bit of literature on this that I got to pull out over the weekend in some obscure medical journals. They've studied mice, for example, with tumors, and shown that when you decrease oxygen in the blood, it promotes what's called angiogenesis, namely blood vessels proliferate. So when the oxygen is low, the body tries to compensate by providing more blood vessels to deliver more blood to that. Well, the problem with that is that with tumors, it causes the tumors to grow more rapidly. It also causes them to spread, to metastasize. And it also, this increased blood flow also makes them resistant to cancer treatments like radiation, so that it appears that it's the low oxygen that's occurring in apnea patients that they're unaware of, and that over a period of years, it allows tumors. We all have, or most all of us have, some tumor at some time in our life, but our body often controls it and contains it. But if a person has low oxygen,
You can spread like wildfire, certainly. Oh, I need to ask you about the solutions and the treatments. What are they? Just give me a quick synopsis. And are they really effective in confronting and dealing with sleep apnea?
Yeah. Well, the biggest issue is when you highlighted that 95% of people with apnea don't know they have it, don't want to know they have it, often because they don't want the treatments. And the mainstay, and of the people that know they have it, those 4 million people, about 5% of all the apneics, less than half of them are adequately treated. There are a whole lot of treatments that have been tried for apnea, and as I think it was Hippocrates once said, that in a disease where there are so many treatments, it's because there's no single good one. But what's emerged over the last 30 years of treating is CPAP. It stands for continuous positive airway pressure. It's just a blower that plugs into a wall and pushes air through a tube that goes to a mask over a person's nose, and it acts like an air splint, so it keeps the throat open even when a person goes into deep sleep.
And it actually works; it allows for this continuous REM sleep.
Right, but it the problem with it is that about 2/3 of the patients don't use it. When you measure objectively, when you download the hours they use it and the nights they use it, only about 1 in 3 people actually use it. So most of them use their CPAP more as a doorstop than a machine for their apnea.
I see.
And then other surgery really doesn't work very well. Dental appliances are often very difficult to get, and they can be very expensive in the hands of some dentists. And but what has come out, though, which was it's almost a coincidence that a little device fell out of heaven, that it's something, it's the brand name of it's called Provent. And I don't have any vested interest in it, but it's sort of like a breathe right strip that ball players use and snorers use. But what this is it's a little Band-Aid that fits over each nostril, and it has a valve in the center so that when a person exhales, there's resistance and the back pressure is developed in the throat, and that prevents the collapse. So the person becomes their own CPAP.
I see, and it appears to work. I do want to ask you, sleep position, does that affect sleep apnea? If you sleep on your stomach, are you less likely to have this problem?
Yes, and in fact, 1 in 10 patients can actually be cured simply by sleeping off their back. because gravity isn't their friend. When they lay on their back, the throat falls back. I mean, the tongue falls back and causes obstruction. And sleeping on the side or the stomach can actually control about 10% of apneics. The other 90% of apneics, most all, are worse on their back. But unfortunately, their apnea isn't adequately controlled to make them safe by getting them off their back.
How difficult is that to get someone to change their sleep position, one that they've developed for their whole life?
You know, it's really become quite easy, in part because it's been noted in just very recent years that the safest position for the baby in a woman who's pregnant is for the woman to sleep on her side. And so young mothers have all learned to do that, and it's really simple. It's basically they use a body pillow that goes between their knees and between their arms so that in order to turn over or sleep on the back, you really have to wake up and make it a conscious maneuver. They can also put a pillow wedge behind their back if they need to as extra help.
Sleep apnea compared to the other sleep disorders, insomnia and so on, is it the dominant sleep disorder that Americans are now facing?
Yeah, in terms of the medical risk, in terms of the commercial drivers are putting other people on the road at risk if they have apnea and they're not diagnosed. And in fact, the Department of Transportation has really escalated the requirements for a driver to get his annual or biannual medical card by putting a real focus on documenting apnea if it's there and making sure that it's treated.
In the skyrocketing rate of childhood obesity now, are you seeing children with sleep apnea also?
Yeah, they present a different way. Often it's not, obviously they don't fall asleep at the wheel because they're too young to drive. But what they often, they may present as being hyperactive, ADD, ADHD kinds of things. They may have learning disabilities, dyslexia and so on, and so they often show up as behavioral problems rather than problems with dozing off and sleepiness and disruptive snoring or that sort of thing.
One last thing: 40 million people who potentially have sleep apnea. Would you say maybe even half of them or more could be cured if they simply lost weight?
Not that high. It was a paper that was just published in that regard that looked at the world's literature on weight loss and apnea. And it's unfortunately, patients, unless they lose a whole lot of weight and are able to maintain that weight, that weight loss alone usually isn't the answer. Having the exception to that is weight loss surgery. Because the weight that's lost is quite dramatic, and it's also sustained weight loss, that's often curative. So that surgery's place in apnea isn't so much on throat procedures, but rather on bariatric surgery, weight loss surgery in people who are really heavy.
Dr. Joe Golish, a professor of sleep medicine with Metro Health System in Cleveland, also the medical director of the North Coast Sleep Center. Dr. Golish, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks so much, Mike. Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to talk about this new website helps tens of thousands of Michigan parents track their children when they're out driving. And we'll get some of the details on how exactly that works. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.